Welcome to Westmeath Talks, a series of conversations discussing what's important in our lives. Our guests include the people who are there to help us and our communities thrive. So listen and enjoy as they share their knowledge with us today. So my guests today are Christina Joyce and Caroline Nevin. Christina is the coordinator of the Primary Healthcare Project for Travellers in Westmeath with Westmeath Community Development. Christina also designs and delivers culture awareness workshops to statutory, community and voluntary agencies. Caroline is the Community Development stroke Health Worker for Travellers in Westmeath, also with Westmeath Community Development. Caroline is the accommodation support person to support travellers with education and health issues. And Caroline also represents travellers on different community forums. Guys, you're both very welcome. So we're going to have a talk about traveller culture and maybe look at the differences between customs within the travelling community compared to the non-travelling community. Tell me a little bit about the traveller culture. Who would like to start?
Traveller culture, we have our own unique culture and sets of beliefs and values. We're also very conscious. We've been delivering cultural awareness workshops since 99. And we did deliver to all different agencies. But we are aware that there are different groups of travellers, like as in the more traditional travellers and some travellers who live their lives more like the settled people. So they wouldn't hold on to those values as much as the traditional travellers would.
So even within the travelling community then, there's different versions of the culture?
Oh, very much so, yes. Well, we would come from a very traditional traveller background. And as we were growing up, when we were from the age of 11 to 12, we were like in training for life, if you like. From that age, a young girl from the age of 11 to 13, she would know how to cook, how to clean, how to sew, how to do all of the things that were going to help her in her the role that she would take in life, and that would be to be the wife and mother. Education was never a thing for travellers. It was always to grow up, get married and continue the traveller lineage.
Like, so being a homemaker then was the priority then for young
traveller
girls?
Very much so, yes. And for the traditional travellers, it was like very tunnel vision. It was like a straight and narrow path. From a young age, the whole purpose of life, your whole goal was to grow up, get married and be the perfect wife and mother. Education, employment, they were never seen as an option for young traveller girls. It was very much, as I said, tunnel vision.
And were the young traveller girls, were they happy with that?
At the time, it was all they'd known. If it's something that's always been there, you don't question it. I think it's travellers who have gone on to education would question more, why is it this way? And I think that was the fear behind a lot of travellers letting their girls continue in education, was that they might see another way and want that other way. And that would have been a fear for a lot of the older travellers.
What about you, Caroline?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I know that things have changed again, but that's with young girls going on further in school. Because when we were younger, it was sixth class, you made your confirmation. They were the most important things because of the religious beliefs that travellers have, very religious belief. Make your communion, your confirmation. After that, you can read and write a bit. Sure, what you need, education wouldn't have been a priority, as Christine said. Nowadays, that is changing because more young girls are staying on in school. I know there is a law there that you must stay in school at least until you're 16, which I'm delighted that's in place, because for the travellers who want to go on in education, other travellers won't judge them and say, oh, look, they're letting their girls on. They're not going to be as good as the other girls. You know, they're not going to hold on to the culture as much, because the laws in place is like saying they're going on, they have to go on. So that means the girls are benefiting from getting the education and they won't be judged in the eyes of the rest of the travellers.
Would that have happened then?
It would have in the past. Education wasn't a priority. So the more traditional families would believe that after sixth class, they have enough of school and get them ready for life. Now that that's changing, the girls are getting more of an opportunity to get an education, even if it is to 16, because it gives them more of an opportunity. And plus, all travellers are doing it now, so no one's going to think, are they going to judge me for letting my girls on? Are they going to think I'm any less of a traveller?
Would there be young traveller girls that would be happy to keep with the traditions and focus primarily on becoming married and being a homemaker?
Years ago, it would have been the only thing. Like, you wouldn't know any other way. You'd be happy enough to do that because that's the right thing to do and you wouldn't question it, as Christine said. But nowadays, I think a lot of girls are happy enough to go to school, Christine, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I suppose you're all going to have a number who would love to just not go to school and go stay at home. But I think that most of them do enjoy
it. What about then for the young traveller boys? Were they being raised up to be good husbands?
I think it's always been easier for traveller boys. They didn't have to learn the cook and the sewing and all of that. So they did, of course, have to take on the trade that their father had. And if that was horse selling or markets, you know, whatever, they would take on that trade.
So they had to take on the trade.
They had to take on the trade. And if it, like a lot of travellers, they can't read or write. A lot of the older travellers still can't read or write. So education wasn't seen as a priority because they had a skill that they could use. Let it be the tinsmith who could mend the pots and pans and make things. The man who looked after horses and, you know, he shoed the horses, he cared for them. The person who sold horses as a trade, the market seller, whatever. They had a trade. They didn't need education for it. So they made a living, if you like. And this was passed on to the son. Those skills were passed on. But they had more freedom than the girls had.
Well, what age would a father start to teach his son these skills?
From a very young age. From the age maybe of 8, 9, maybe younger, they would accompany them to horse fairs, to markets. They would watch them use the, you know, the barter that they would use to bargain down or sell things. They would have picked up all of those trades. You know, like how the young girls would play house and would be the young boy would be the father and he would be doing the bartering or, you know, trading, selling. He would be doing that. So he would have picked up them skills because we'd be so much in the father's shadow. From a young age, and it was the same with the girl. She would always be around the mother learning, picking up what she was doing. So from a young age, it was passed on to them.
Well, what about cases then with where the young lad maybe didn't want to pick up the father's trade?
It has happened, though, because it has happened. But preferably, the father would want the son and would do everything he could do to encourage the son that that would be the right trade to do. There are people that would have gone to markets and things and their son doesn't do that, you know. It's not like saying it's against every rule to do a different trade. If that suits them, but as long as they're providing and having some trade.
So the work ethic then is important?
Yeah, it would be to provide. See, the role of the young lad and the man, traveller man, would be to provide for the family. And that's why it was the role of the woman, it suited for the role of the woman to be at home, to be the mother, the wife, to look after the house and clean. So that's why when travellers did go on a return to education or go on into employment, traveller men in general, they would have had questions about it or not be happy with it because the traditional role was for you to be at home, you to take on this role. So why do you need to do something else? And then they would be looked at, maybe people might think or other travellers might think that I can't provide for you. So it would be making them maybe look a little bit weaker, which wasn't the case really, because I think the woman was just doing something for herself. But there was a lot of confusion about that, Christine. And
because it was so against the norm.
Yeah. What was seen to be normal, like. Daddy and mummy never went to school, so they have no literacy skills now, but they have great life skills.
Yeah.
You know, you could never go to the shop and come back and mummy not know exactly how much change she had. Do you know what I'm saying? They got these skills in life because they had to, they couldn't read and write. But she sent us to school every single day. She took an interest in us being educated.
Even though that was probably against the norm as well.
It would have been, but she would have always wanted us to go. We hardly missed a day. But then when it came to moving on from sixth class, even though the teachers would have said, look, we can see that these children, they'll do great. Even if she wanted it, she would be listening to her mother or her sisters to say, no, now they've enough school now. Take them off now, they're getting older now. Older being maybe 11 or 12, which meant we were going to the next step, which was life training, as Christine
said. Life training.
Yeah.
Does that make a traveller woman a good wife?
Oh, brilliant. Excellent.
Does it?
I know. It doesn't make her any better than any other woman. Everybody is an individual, I think. It just means for a traveller woman, she's so ready for life, as in all of the skills you need to be a good woman, or a wife, or a partner, or a mother. But it doesn't make her any better than any other woman. It's just that for a traveller man, yeah, she's a good woman.
And also, Caroline, the fact that travellers get married so much younger. In the past, traveller girls would get married from the age of 15 up. So today, it still would be the case that they would get married from the age of 17, 18. That's why they needed the early training, because they were getting married young.
If you were a traveller girl and you went into 20, you'd be seen as getting old now. Yeah, you should have been asked way before that. Like, a lot of weddings would have been, the people would ask when you're 14, and then you wouldn't get married maybe until you're 18, but you would be promised to that boy.
Is that arranged or is that?
That would have been arranged back then, very much so. In mummy's time, and she would tell you the stories of the parents would go to the pub, they'd come back and they'd say, you're getting married now to such a fella.
After coming back from the pub,
you're getting married now. Maybe tell them in the morning, you're getting married to such a fella. They might know him just to see him. And it might happen in a couple of weeks after that, they might be married. There was no waiting around in those days.
What if the young girl or the young lad didn't want to get married to that particular person?
They didn't have any say at the time. Years ago, it wasn't. I don't think it was. Kind of, it'd be very, very rare for some. Very rare for someone to say they didn't want to get married. It was like, this is how it was. Like, as Carolyn said, the parents would go off. They would have their own chat around a fireside chat or in the pub, come back and decide, like, you have a little boy, I have a little girl. They'd make a good couple and that was it. They shook hands on it. It was agreed. If they were happy with it, then why wouldn't the families, you know, the daughter or the son, they would question it. It was very rare that was ever questioned. I haven't actually heard of any cases where those arranged marriage years ago didn't go ahead as planned.
So romance and flowers and box of chocolates, that didn't come into it?
No, not at them times it didn't. It was very rare, Caroline, for it to happen.
Very rare that a young lad would ask in them days. Daddy was one in a million. He asked Mommy's father, could he marry her? She was a little bit older.
Okay.
And he did ask our grandfather at the time, like, and now the brothers liked him, which helped him, his case. But he went up and he asked him, which wasn't rarely done at the time, as people would tell you. And he said, no, go on, you're a bit young now, go off, Avic. That was his words. But Daddy was having none of it because he wanted to marry her and that was it.
He was in love.
He liked her. They kind of grew up together on the road. And as Carolyn said, he'd hung out with her brothers and he knew them. So I think hanging out with the brothers was to keep the eye on Mommy at the time. But he got to like her, let it be love or a crush, whatever.
Has that changed a lot now then?
It has, big time. Big time. Boys will ask their girls, like I have three son-in-laws and they came and asked for the daughters. They came and they asked my husband for, could they marry the girls?
There's no family involvement then?
No, there was no matchmaking whatsoever. They choose them themselves. And that's very much the case now. If a young girl doesn't want to get married, you know, she won't.
And she won't be made.
No, there'll be no force. No, if she says no, she says no. I think the younger generation of travellers, and people could say, look, it's down to too much education or too much television and they've seen a whole other way of things. This whole falling in love thing, this whole liking the person, wanting to marry the
silly
person.
Silly romance.
Yes, it's so the romance, yeah. But I think it is. I think very much so. That has changed the whole mindset of young boys and girls. Because years ago I was on the road and there was only a few travellers. It could be five members of the one family on the road. And through passing or at markets, they might meet up other travellers. Now today it's very different for young boys and girls. Do you know, they're going to different places to see other young boys and girls. There's Facebook, there's all this social media. There's ways of boys and girls liking, getting to talk to each other. It's changed very much.
Has that been a good change, do you think?
I think so.
I think so, yes, it has. I think people are given a chance to marry who you want to marry rather than marry who you're told to marry, which is a very different thing.
What other elements then to traveller culture that defines travellers?
We have our own language.
Okay, so let's talk
called,
about that.
Which is called Gammon or Sheelt, Cant, depending on which part of Ireland you're from, we call it Cant.
Is that a Midlands thing or just Westmeath?
I think it's more in Midlands. A lot of the travellers in the middle call it Cant.
Okay.
We would have grown up and Daddy and Mommy would have spoke a lot of Cant when we were growing up. I think most of us was so as they could have a private conversation without us knowing what we were talking about. But we kept on.
Were you not brought up talking Cant then?
We learned it from them. We learned it from Daddy and Mommy. You know, Daddy would have a way of learning as with like a game. So him and Mommy would talk more. But as we got old enough to understand that they were talking in a language we didn't understand, Daddy would learn us. It's like a little classroom. And he would call out words and ask us what they were. And we were kind of competing as siblings to be the best in Daddy's eyes. We knew the most words. So it was a game, but we learned our language through a game. You know, it was Daddy's way of learning us. Now I have, like, 10 grandchildren. So my oldest granddaughter, Emily, who's 12, about 2 years ago, she heard my husband, who talks a lot of Cant. He talks more Cant. He slips in and out of it because he came from a really traditional family. And she was wondering what granddaddy was talking about. I put a little book together. It was called Learn to Speak Cant. It was specifically with Emily in mind and other traveller children. It was a fun way of learning the language and keeping the language alive. I think it's very important that we do because the younger travellers don't speak very much Cant.
It's similar to Irish.
A lot of it would be. If you give an example of Fuinneog, we would say Grinneog. Durris, we would say Ruddus. You know, some of the words, because travellers are, first of all, Irish as well, you know, and they would have known the Gaelic. And then along the way, then they would have, you have their own language. And somewhere in between, some of the words got intertwined. But there's others that are very different. You know, there's a word for everything, if you like.
Is it a dialect of Irish?
Yes, some of it is. Like I said, some of the words would sound very similar. And there was a man in Longford and he put together a book, a dictionary on all Cant words. So a lot of it is. It does go back and the words intertwine, but then there's some of it that isn't. I went to a seminar about 10 years ago and there was a Romani traveller there and she was talking and she was saying about her language And some of the words she said, I could understand exactly what she was saying. Some of the words were very similar. But again, yet she had other words that probably had, you know, she was from Spain. So it was probably with the Spanish in with their language as well, like the Irish is in with ours. But she was saying like, he's Jesus Shandik and Gorgia, which means he's a rich man. You know, this big shot came in a big suit and all that. And she said, she made that remark to me, but I knew what she was saying. There were some words, yeah, it's very similar. There's a place called Murphy Village in America. And travellers would have emigrated there years and years ago, over 100 years ago. A man from Navan, Michael McDonough, he does a lot of work with travellers. And he went there with some settled colleagues of his. They were doing some work. And the language is still very much kept alive with the younger, even with the children, which he was surprised by. The traditions that the matchmaker, all of that is still very much all the old traditions. They never lost them.
Is that because the further the way they went from home,
they held on to it?
They held on to it.
Maybe. There's a school in Navan, a class in Navan, where they just do, like your Gaelic school, you just talk cant all day, which I think is brilliant. Because the children, you know,
it's encouraging the younger people.
Yeah, yeah, to keep the language alive, because you don't want to lose everything.
Like would there be poems written in cant? Would there be stories songs? Written
would,
in cant?
We were at, myself and Christine would have, we would have been the two of the six first travellers to graduate as mediators. As a kind of a celebration day at the end of it, there was a young man from, he works a lot in Dublin and Pavia Point. I can't remember his name. And we were shocked. He was a beautiful singer, but he actually sang the song in cant, which was amazing because he could not only speak it fluently, but he sang it. It was lovely to listen to. But it just shows how brilliant he was. You know, some words I wouldn't understand, some words I'd get. And as I said, if a traveller walked in here and spoke in cant, you wouldn't have a clue. I might miss out a couple of words, but I'd still get the gist of what he was saying. So it was lovely to see that it was so strong with some travellers, Christina. Mm.
And has this been passed on down to, say, to your grandchildren? Is it been kept alive then?
It has, very much so. My youngest daughter, Caroline, she talks more cant than my four older children put together. She's always talking cant. My husband is really always talks cant, so she's inherited his love of the cant, and as much as she can, she'll use the language.
So I was going to ask you, is that her strive to keep the language alive, or is it because of her love of the language?
She loves it, and she loves the fact that we have our own language, so she'll always be encouraging her own children to talk cant, which I think is brilliant, that the younger travellers keep it alive, because travellers in Ireland, they're no longer nomadic. We can't travel around. So we've lost that one part of our culture already. Now, the older travellers, if you're talking to them, they'll talk about the good old days where they could travel around and go to the old traditional traveller camps. And that's all gone. They only have memories of that now.
Was that travelling around, was that an important piece to the culture?
It was. It was a very big part of it, because they didn't have education, so they travelled for work. The seasonal work that go around where there'd be farmers and the country roads to do the picking the hay, picking the potatoes, you know, stacking all that, mending pots and pans. That was very much the livelihood of travellers years ago. It's a distant memory for travellers now.
We did it. Do you remember the little interviews? We did interviews, a few interviews a couple of years back when we picked a few older families, like in Westmead. You know, even though the interview questions were the same to everyone, but when we came to that question about travelling around, and they said they'd go back in a heartbeat if they could. They can appreciate some changes that have been happening, and they get why, you know, some things have to change. But tomorrow morning they will go back. The times, the sense of community, people had nothing. It wasn't about, there was no one in competition. It wasn't about look what they have and look at the value they have. But it was, everyone shared. If you didn't have it, someone would share what they had. It was a better sense of community. And it was that feeling of being a part of a community that said they would go back to.
I can understand the benefits, say, economically, say, from moving for work, but would that not have been difficult, say, for a mum to up everything up and go again?
You can imagine. For me today, I would say yes, definitely, because we've grown up in a whole different time, a different way of life. But for those mothers, it was how it was. You know, like I said, you don't question, this is how it is. It's always been this
way. So it's just, this is just what you've done?
Yeah. This is what, yeah. Okay. They had big families and they did pack up the cart and the wagon and they'd move on again to the next place. You know, in the winter, obviously, they go to a more sheltered camp. The summer was different. They could have the open camp.
And they knew they had to go move on to get them, for the men to get more work. But I'd say there was, like, even listening to Mommy, it was always like an adventure. It was always exciting. You know, going on to move on to a different town, a different place. And it was all part of it, wasn't it? And she loved it. Like, she would, that's how she lived her life.
Like, when I grew up and hearing them stories, I always kind of romanticised the stories myself, you know, about the lovely gypsy girl there at the fireside, and they're singing songs, and the men would be there, the women would be there at the end of the day, and they'd do their, you know, they'd have their sing song and they'd relax. But you have to acknowledge that there were hardships as well, because they had big families and they were living on the side of the road with little or no facilities, with the cold weather, you know, they had all that. But when you talk to them, you don't hear any of the hinder stories. You never hear them saying about the hard winters or the cold. It was just that they were happy times. They were their best times, if you like.
Is that because they're filtering that out? Or maybe. Is it because it was just such a good adventure for them?
Or the fact that the good times outweighed the bad. You know, there were so many more good times than bad times. You would hear travellers today talking about it's harder times with discrimination, with, you know, with not being accepted. Whereas at that time, they never got the discrimination that you hear people talking about today. They didn't. They were welcomed by the settled people. They worked for the farmers. People loved to see them come into their house because they were telling stories. You know, singing songs, passing on news about the settled man, farmer who lives 3 miles down the road. You know, they called in at Tom and Tom was looking well and Tom was talking. You know, it was a way
of... So you used to kind of be like the messengers.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And it was that. They don't have this or not being served in pubs or not being, you know, being hushed along. They never got that. So with all the good things that come with progress and with the change in times, a lot of bad things came with it too.
Is there any good things that came with the change, do you think?
For me, education, the change in the culture is not so rigid and people have choices in who they want to marry. There's a lot of good things. The woman's role is not seen as that, as just being in the home, as being barefoot and pregnant, if you like, in the Stone Age.
And I think, Christine, the change in traveller men is great. Whereas traveller men, say, going back, would be just, mindset would be, that's what the role of the woman. Now, because people are going on an education and are entering an employment, men are becoming more open-minded. So the younger traveller men are looking at their mothers or their sisters or their aunties or some relatives work in education, so it's acceptable. So it gives the future women, if you like, more opportunities, I think.
Okay, so the young lads are saying that the traveller women going out to work is a normal thing.
Yeah, it seemed to be more normal. Like, yeah, I do believe that, Christine. Mm.
Because my sons was known, I would have always worked all their life. Their aunts works, their sisters work. It's more acceptable. It's not something that's like, oh God, who does she think she is? She's going to work here. Does she think she's not a traveller anymore? Is she trying to be a settled person? Do you know, is her husband not providing for her? Those questions don't be asked anymore. Yes, they were when we started working first. We got all of that, Trunahas. You know, we got all of that. Who do you think you are? Like, are you trying to be a settled person? Are you not happy in your life? Or we got all of them things. We had a hard struggle, Caroline, to get to where we are today. And at stage now, people know who we are. We'd be seen as role models by young girls, hopefully, you know, they would say. And you'd want them to go down that road as well. And
they'd also know the work we're doing is to improve as many travellers' lives as we can, improve the quality of life, improve their health. If there is linking them in with other projects, with employment and education and supporting children and parents who have children in school, if there's issues with teachers, trying to improve the quality of life, like as work with the other agencies, councils and other agencies that can improve their quality of life. So from that then, you know, there's a purpose to our work. It's for travellers. This is with and for travellers, and we're hopefully going to better things. There's a reason why we're working, you know, and it'll encourage other people to do the same. And there's a reason to go on in education because there is hope for travellers.
What do you think a travelling community could teach a settled community?
I know there's a lot of conflict, unfortunately, and that's everywhere anyway. But I think with travellers, there is a great sense of closeness. You rarely hear of, and I don't mean this in a bad way in any way, if there's an older traveller person, because they've looked after us when we were younger, we would look after them. We would rarely you hear of an older traveller person going into a home because travellers would look after them. I don't mean that's a bad thing either if that happens. I just mean that travellers have a sense of community, a great sense of community, even if they're not talking and someone dies, that they'll go out of their way to make that collection to help that family. Even if they're not speaking, even if a massive thing has happened before that and they fell out, there's a sense of closeness and togetherness. And I know you know, life changes and people change. But when it comes to it, I think that travellers are really close. So I don't know if we could teach you that, because you could tell us stuff. We have a great sense of community. I don't know, you see. So
what
I'm
about, say,
that.
The culture in general within the travelling community? You know, are there things within it that maybe as a settled person that could be good for us?
I would love, and I would hope, and everything we do, we try to give a better understanding of traveller culture to people. So listening and trying to understand where travellers are coming from, it's children in school, it's children in foster care, it's understanding the culture and the background. It doesn't mean you have to agree with everything. It means that when a traveller child comes into school or a traveller woman goes into work, it's understanding the culture that comes with that woman, or as you often say, the baggage that comes along, do you know?
I think it's a lot harder for the traveller woman to go against everything she believes and her family and everyone to want an education. Even today, Caroline, there's still going to always be the more traditional traveller think they shouldn't do that. So when you see that woman and she's in work and she's a traveller, it's, as I said, it is the invisible baggage that they're carrying with them. From the age of 10 to 11, you know, from 10 or 11 up along, it's all that training, all that things. It's not so straight forward as it is for the settled girl, because the settled girl, she will go on to education. There's no talk of marriage or relationships or anything. Her role is to be that child for as long as she wants, go to education, get her job, fall in love with a fella along the way, buy a house, get married. You know, it's a whole different path in life for them, if you like. The young traveller girl has so much responsibility from a young age to act and behave older than she is. By the time she comes to my age, she's probably lived a thousand lives, if you like, if you understand what I'm trying to say, through the pressures of never being that child, being older, you know, being older, having to be older from a young age, having to take on more responsibility, being married at a younger age, being a granny at a younger age, you know. And you can say, yes, travellers have always died younger, so we don't have as long as life. So maybe that's why we rush things forward, get married younger, be the granny younger, so as we get to do it all in the shorter lifespan that travellers have.
Is there any case where that's not true, where travellers do, say, grow old or much older?
Travellers in their 60s are seen as really old to travellers, because the 70s, 80s, wow, they're kind of antique and our, you know, we don't have money.
Mommy is 70 and she would be seen as old.
And she would be a great granny over and over again at that age.
She would be seen as old because of the number of older travellers that's left, you know, in Westmead. You know, if we just took Mullingar.
Does she see herself as old?
Travellers our age would see themselves as older now.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Christine's right. You know, when you're 14 or 15 and you just want to be that little girl, that little teenager, and you look at the little girls, the non-traveller girls, and they're having so much fun. And then if you've seen a little traveller girl and a settled girl and how they acted and watched and observed, that little traveller girl is way beyond her years and has to act that way. And has to be seen to be that way. And I know we did it, and it's been still done at times. You can see that difference, you know.
So we'll finish with this question. What is the most positive thing about being a traveller, in your view?
For me, it's the sense of community, the strong sense of community that's there, the closeness within the traveller community.
What about for you, Caroline?
See, I would say the sense of belonging to a group of people, the shared history, culture, beliefs. I could go to the furthest part of Ireland and I could meet a traveller I may never have spoken to before, and there could be a room full of non-travellers, but we will connect. It's hard to explain. I can't explain it. I always wondered why that happens. We can connect straight away. We start to talk as if we know each other. We might have never met each other and might never meet each other again. It's that connection you have with travellers. And I like it. I love that sense of belonging. And I wouldn't change it. I've always been so proud of who I am. I'm always proud of who I am. I'm never going to change for anyone. Any work I've ever done myself and Christine has always been never denying who I am. Any work I've done, I'm Caroline Nevin, yes, and I'm working to better travellers' lives. So I've always proud to say who I am.
Guys, thank you so much for coming in today to talk about traveller culture. Thank you. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Until our next podcast, Slán go fóill.